great, another political talk show. Just what America needs. It's time for something different. I figure if you're listening to me, you are obviously a person of very high intellect.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Don't shoot the messenger. With your host, Kathy Wynn.
Ann Coulter, Fox News blabbermouth, radical right-wing columnist, and now Ann is a self-proclaimed expert in the field of physics as applied to nuclear science. Welcome to Don't Shoot the Messenger on Jackalope Radio, www.jackaloperadio.com. Please join us on our website if you want to enter into one of the chat rooms and get in on the discussion. We're starting out today talking about Ms. Ann Coulter, who apparently has a degree in nuclear science that nobody was aware of, because Ann is spreading the word about the health benefits of excessive radiation exposure. Yes, that's right. Thank you, Ann. Some people in Japan were concerned about their exposure to radiation causing cancer and all kinds of horrible disease. But Anne wants us to know that excessive radiation exposure is actually good for us. So, but let's just look at this before you rush out and buy your plane ticket to Japan. Let's just talk about this a bit. Apparently what Ms. Coulter has done is taken a very complex theory of something called radiation hormesis. Go ahead and Google it. This theory applies to very, very low-dose radiation. It's a theory that is far from proven, and one that many, if not most, of the top nuclear scientific authorities hotly deny. However, that's not enough to stop Anne from explaining her position on excessive radiation exposure. She's taken this theory and erroneously applied it to high doses, and she's ignored the very serious health effects that can be expected to those in close proximity to something like the nuclear accident at Fukushima in Japan. This is, as one website I looked at put it, it's really like saying a match can be helpful for lighting a candle, thus a flamethrower must be really helpful, and gosh darn it, you should stand right in front of it so you can really reap its benefits. Thank you, Ann Coulter. So the reason I'm starting out with this is because I just think this is how crazy it's gotten. Really, seriously, folks, this is how far right-wingers will go to defend and promote an industry that their corporate friends have a serious financial interest in. And that's always what it comes down to, isn't it? It always comes down to money. And here we are. This is about money. Their financial interests apparently outweigh your and my right to know the truth and dangers and risks of nuclear energy. So these are the types of facts. I'm using air quotes here that you can't see because it's radio, but I'm doing air quotes. Right, Todd?
Todd's confirming that. You got it.
But these are the things that will work with ditto heads and people with tea bags stapled to their cowboy hats who don't question the Fox talking heads, no matter how outrageous their lies or their distortions of reality. But the sad thing is that enough people buy into this type of rubbish that it actually has an impact on our nation's policy on energy sources. Energy sources as dangerous as nuclear power. It's the same kind of nonsense that even despite warnings from the world's top environmental scientists, convinces people that global warming isn't really happening, even as the polar ice caps melt away. So this is the scary aspect, at least to me, about what could just be dismissed as another Fox News idiot spouting off about something she's clueless about, and we're used to that with Ann Coulter. But the problem is that enough people listen to that garbage and believe it that they elect politicians who work for the companies that it benefits, whether it's the oil industry or nuclear energy industry, biofuel, coal. Their motivation is not to protect us and our children from disaster and disease. It's not even to provide us with safe, reliable energy sources. Their motivation is really simple. It's money, which is kind of ironic because money is green. And these are people who really are as far from green motivated as you could get. But the problem is that our government falls further and further under the control of people with this kind of motivation. A small, small number of greed-driven corporate giants. And because they have so much money at stake, and they are willing to feed us any BS that they think will fly, even that excessive radiation is good for you. I'm not sure how much worse it gets than that. Seriously? But that's how far they'll go. And, like I say, sadly, there are people who will buy this line of BS and not even question it because it comes from their right-wing sources. And there are enough things about being on that side of the right wing that they like, that they'll believe anything that is fed to their little minds. So that is the scary place that we're at right now in America. And as I said, as our government falls farther and farther under the control of this small number of greed-driven corporate giants, and really, truly, if the research is done, if you do just a very minimal investigation on the internet, you start to realize that the fate of our country and the interests that are represented are in the hands of just a very small number of very wealthy people. So if our American government becomes a branch of Walmart and the Koch brothers, which the Supreme Court opened the door to happening, don't look for anybody to care if you're poisoned by radiation or the planet burns up from global warming. Because what's happening right now is that the litmus test for legislation will not be whether a law protects our rights and freedoms or even protects basic public safety. The test will be this. Does it increase profits for billionaires? Yeah, that's where we're at, folks. That's really sadly where we are at in America right now. Every single American should truly be scared by the speed at which this is happening, at which our government is being railroaded by right-wing corporate entities with one singular goal: to generate profits by whatever means they can buy. And right now, they can buy the United States Congress, and in the next presidential election, they will do everything in their power to buy the presidency, and don't think that they will not. There is only one thing that stands in their way, and it's the most important thing, and it's the one thing that has not changed since the founding of this country, and that's democracy. And that is, hopefully, there are more of us who care about the rights and freedoms of average people in this country, that we will stand up to this. But you have to get out there. It's democracy only works if people get out and vote. So I know that when I talk about the increasing control of government by corporate interests, there are always people who think it's extreme, because I get in conversations about this with people and endless, pointless Facebook threads arguing this point. And they just don't believe it could ever possibly get to the point where we're pledging allegiance to Walmart. But truly, that is the kind of head-in-the-sand thinking that will allow it to happen. And the last election showed us that. If progressives and liberal Democrats don't stand up, don't go to the polls, and I left out independents. Gosh, you independents should be with us. If there was ever a time in history where we needed people who think independently, who truly pay attention to what they read in the news, not from people like Ann Coulter, not Rush Limbaugh, not Glenn Beck, but people who truly pay attention and read the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and a host of other print media that at least will give you some insight into what is truly going on in this country. Those are the people that need to get involved. Independence. So this is where we're at. We're at a point where our candidates are bought and paid for and installed in Congress to represent not you and I, but the almighty dollar, and they're not interested in you or me having that dollar, trust me. They're interested in making sure government paves the way for their enrichment at the expense of all of the rest of us. So I decided today on the show that I would look at a very well-documented example of just how far the big titans of industry will go in order to seize control of our government. And this is an incident that dates back to 1933, following the election of Franklin Roosevelt, a man whose dedication to improving the quality of life for average Americans absolutely struck fear into the hearts of wealthy capitalists who were far more interested in average Americans being kept so financially desperate that they would work for pennies in coal mines, they would work in factories that were fire traps, and they would even have their children slaving from dawn to dusk instead of going to school. This incident is commonly known as the business plot, and it is seriously unknown in American history. But trust me, if you Google search it, you will find all kinds of information on the business plot. The authenticity of it has been confirmed by many political historians who've researched it. So this is how the business plot played out in 1933, shortly after Roosevelt's first 100 days. And this was a situation where America's very wealthiest businessmen, yes, what a surprise, in 1933, all the richest people were men. Oh, guess what? Also, they were white. And if any of them were gay, they would not admit it. So anyway, they all got together after Roosevelt was elected because they saw him as such a threat to the wealthiest people in this country ruling this country that it sent them into a panic, and they felt like they had to do something to seize control of the government for the benefit of the very wealthiest. The people who were the main players in this story, the business plot to overthrow Roosevelt, again, Google it. I'm not making this up. Google it. You will find all kinds of information on it. But it's not being taught in history class in high school. Anyway, the players were René DuPont, right-wing chemical industrialist and founder of the American Liberty League, the organization that was assigned to execute the plot. Grayson Murphy. Grayson Murphy was the director of Goodyear, Bethlehem Steel, and a group of J.P. Morgan banks. William Doyle, former state commander of the American Legion and a central plotter of this coup. John Davis was a former Democratic presidential candidate and a senior attorney for J.P. Morgan. John J. Raskup, a high-ranking DuPont officer and a former chairman of the Democratic Party. In later decades, Raskob would become what was known as a Knight of Malta, a Roman Catholic religious order with a high percentage of CIA spies, including, later on, CIA directors William Casey, William Colby, and John McCone. Robert Clark, one of Wall Street's richest bankers and stockbrokers, and last but definitely not least, Gerald McGuire. Gerald McGuire was a bond salesman for Clark and a former commander of the Connecticut American Legion, and McGuire was the key recruiter to General Butler, who played a key role in this whole scenario. So what the plotters attempted to do is recruit a man named General Smedley Butler. They tried to get past the name Smedley. I know. I had a hard time with that. But
it's kind of horrible.
It's really a weird name. Kind of scary. So this would have been the guy, the nerdiest guy in your class in elementary school. But nevertheless, he plays a key role in this. And the role that he played was not what they wanted him to play, because basically he revealed the entire plan to America, and he played along with it, but he realized what they were up to, and he actually exposed them. But they selected him because he was a war hero. He was very popular with the troops at that time, and the very wealthy right-wing plotters thought his reputation was important to make the troops, American troops, feel confident that they were doing the right thing by overthrowing a democratically elected president. Gosh. I guess you could do that back then with something like this. In present day, you find out that a president had sex with an intern and you try to undo his presidency that way, or you also can pretend that the president of the United States is not actually a citizen of this country. So there are all kinds of ways that the rich and powerful have always tried to overthrow or get rid of democratically elected presidents who actually represent not the wealthy and powerful in this country, but the people, the true people of this country, those of us who get up and work, those of us who get out of bed every morning and have to go to some damn job, and really, truly, don't about 90% of us hate it? Don't we usually hate our job? I love coming here and talking about politics, but I have had so many sucky jobs in my life. I couldn't even count them all. So What I want, and what I think most of us want, is to know that our government is looking out for us, that even though we have to maybe go to some sucky job every day, that we still have a government that looks out for our interests and does not just sell us out to Wall Street. But I digress.
Pipe dream.
Anyway, so General Smedley Butler, again, Smedley, I know, but he was very popular with the troops at the time. He was basically a military hero. He identified with them, and he was considered a man of the people, not the elite. So when the plotters of this business plan approached General Butler with their proposal to lead what amounted to a coup, this was their plan. Their plan was to overthrow the government and to use General Smedley Butler to do it. He actually pretended to go along with the plan at first. Secretly, he knew from the beginning he was going to reveal it to Congress at the right moment. So here's what they proposed. I know what you're thinking. I know what so many of you are thinking. This is some crazy little story, unsubstantiated with no basis in fact. I'm telling you again, Google it. Google it and find out how many hits you get and how much documentation there is to back up and prove what happened in 1933 after Roosevelt was elected, a president who stood up for the common man, who stood up for us. He stood up for people that work for a living against, DuPont, Doyle, the biggest titans of industry. Oh, sorry, I forgot Henry Ford. The biggest titans of industry at the time. So here is what they wanted General Butler to do. They wanted him to deliver an ultimatum to Franklin Roosevelt. And what they wanted to do was blackmail Roosevelt because of his polio. And they wanted to force him to allow a newly created cabinet officer called the Secretary of General Affairs, who would run things in his place because they were going to convince the American people that Roosevelt was incapable of being president due to his polio. Now, of course, the Secretary of General Affairs would be carrying out the orders of Wall Street. If Roosevelt refused, then General Butler was to force him out with an army of 500,000 war veterans from the American Legion. Here's where it gets interesting. McGuire, who I told you earlier, bond salesman, a former commander of the Connecticut American Legion, and a key recruiter to General Butler. McGuire assured Butler the cover story would work, and it was this. This is a direct quote, and this has been documented. This is what McGuire said. "You know the American people will swallow that. We've got the newspapers. We will start a campaign that the president's health is failing." I'm just putting my own little insert in here, which is, or that he's not an American citizen. "Everyone can tell that by looking at him that his health is failing, and the dumb American people will fall for it in a second." They promised that they would spend half of a $60 million fortune to save the other half. And so here's the thing. What type of government were they trying to put in place to replace Roosevelt's New Deal? McGuire, again, pretty much the ringleader of this whole deal, was very, very candid to a reporter friend of General Butler's, and what he said was, and I quote, and again, you can Google it if you want. You won't believe me, but Google it. This is a direct quote. "We need a fascist government in this country to save the nation from the communists who want to tear it down and wreck all that we have built in America. The only men who have the patriotism to do it are the soldiers, and Smedley Butler is the ideal leader. He could organize 1 million men overnight." It turns out that McGuire traveled to Italy to study Mussolini's fascist state and came away very, very impressed. He wrote glowing reports back to his boss, suggesting that they implement the same thing in America. And again, I know this sounds too crazy to believe, but it's really important to remember that this was 1933. The really heinous crimes of fascism had not yet been committed. America had not entered into war with Germany. We had not seen the true horrifying nature of fascism and its ability to actually destroy an entire ethnic group of people. So at this time, people did not really truly understand all of the negative impacts of entering into some kind of fascist state. But McGuire, one of the architects of this business plot to overthrow Roosevelt, clearly understood this very well. He openly admired Mussolini because he had used a strong hand to deal with labor unions. That sounds familiar. Mussolini also was very successful at squelching social unrest. That means if people in the country are unhappy with what's happening, then if you've got a strong enough government, a fascist enough government, you can stomp that out, even if it's at the point of a gun. So here's the thing about this business plot that I think is fascinating. I think Americans today would just be completely appalled to learn of the famous millionaires. Today we've got billionaires, but back then millionaires were the same thing as our millionaires today. And these were people who initially admired Hitler and Mussolini. And among them were Henry Ford, John D. Rockefeller, John and Alan Dulles, who, besides being millionaires, would later become Eisenhower's Secretary of State and CIA Director, respectively. And, of course, everyone else on the list. They disavowed Hitler and Mussolini only after their atrocities grew to indefensible levels and only after those levels were brought to public attention. So, we're going to take a break and come right back with more on the business plot and Ann Coulter and all the rest.
personnel.
You got it.
You got it.
You found the most listened to radio station.
Jackalope Radio.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Don't shoot the messenger.
You're listening to Don't Shoot the Messenger with your host, Kathy Wynn.
We're back. And hey, we're talking about something called the business plot to overthrow Franklin Roosevelt. And my point in all of this long story was that, guess what, America? The biggest corporate interests in this country don't give a damn about us. They give a damn about one thing, and that is money.
And surprise.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I know. Todd jumping in there with a little editorial comment.
I always do that.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Well, he's very good, and he's always very astute with those editorial comments. But, yeah, truly, I wish that people would go online and Google the business plot, because rather than me just reading the story of this, which is, I've been told during the break, was kind of boring.
I never said it was boring. I said it's a read-along. I feel like I'm at, you know, it's really nice because you got that soothing voice, but it's almost like you're in a classroom and you're going, man, I love this story about Goldilocks and them bears.
Anyway, so
Kathleen, you did a beautiful job. Don't listen to him.
I know. And this is my friend Julie Valdivia, who's joining me today to be another voice on the show, which I appreciate. But anyway, my point with explaining the business plot, which it turns out was excruciatingly boring for everybody but me, was that, again, corporate America does not care about you any farther than the dollar bill you take out of your wallet, and that's all that they care about you. They want our money. They don't want to give us jobs. In fact, they're giving your job to somebody in India and China. So that was my point. That if we, as Americans, decide it's just too hard to think about this stuff, even the boring stuff, then there are plenty of very wealthy and powerful interests who are ready and waiting to take advantage of that. And that's what I believe. And that's why I have this show and why I'm excited to get on here every week and talk about it, because I do think that there is one thing we've got going for us, folks, and that is they've got more money, but there are more of us out there, out here. There are more of us. Anyway, so all right, moving along from the business plot. I'm going to move on into a story by John Nichols on Cap Times, which is online. And what John Nichols has done is discovered that one of Governor Scott Walker, you all know our friend Scott Walker in Wisconsin, who... again, no friend of the working class in this country. But one of the things that Scott Walker has done that I think this is very interesting, because this is the party, the Republican Party, the conservatives. These are the people that will just rail against, you know, the power of federal government, the power of concentrated federal government. So one of the things that this reporter, John Nichols, has ferreted out is a little aspect to Scott Walker's plan, which is to limit the ability of people in small communities to have control over their own government. So what Walker's budget proposal seeks is to eliminate the rights of citizens to vote by referendum to set their own local tax levies at levels that are needed to maintain basic services such as snow plowing, garbage collection, recycling, stormwater management, and road maintenance. You all know what it takes to live in a city in an urban environment. Well, what Scott Walker wants to do is put that into the hands of the state government. So if you live in Madison or you live in or you live in some small town in Wisconsin, he wants to make it so that the state government decides when and how much you can have snow removal, how much you can pay for it, and how much of that you can decide for yourselves. So this, again, this is the party of small government, right? Small government, wouldn't that be people at the local level in rural communities and small communities all over America deciding for themselves how much they want to spend on snow removal? Because I'll tell you this much, when I get snowed in on a bad day and need to get somewhere, I am willing to spend a whole freaking lot on snow removal. Right, Julie?
Absolutely.
She's nodding her head. We live in Missouri. We have snow, folks.
We don't have much snow removal in the Kansas City area, though. It's awful. It's terrible.
But your point is that they could take the money from the small town during a big snowstorm and shift it somewhere else, and you're screwed.
Exactly.
No snow removal, because they want to put it on the state level.
Exactly. And this is Scott Walker's plan, is like, well, we have all these people that will be paying money into the state government, but they won't get it out in the form of services to their own community.
They're not going to see any
of
it.
No.
They're not going to see curbside recycling.
No.
They're not going to see sufficient trash pickup, because it's all going to go where he wants it to go.
No, exactly. So, I'm just going to read a bit of the, don't get bored, but I'm going to read a little of the resolution of what this plan is about of Scott Walker's, because I think it's important to just have the actual wording and the facts out there. So, whereas towns are the only form of government in Wisconsin, as well as most of the world, where citizens participate in self-governance through direct democracy on certain issues, including voting directly on their own property tax levy each year, and whereas the citizens set the levy to provide vital services that impact their daily lives and long-term quality of life, including law enforcement, fire protection, emergency medical services, garbage collection, recycling, drainage, stormwater management. These are the things that Scott Walker thinks he should take control of instead of your own community. So, again, this all goes back to this same thing, where there are people who believe that they can espouse certain things like small government, no taxes, all of this stuff. But when it comes right down to it, they have no problem funneling taxes to those that are rich and powerful already, but they will cut us off from our own basic services and our right to demand those services and to pay for them ourselves. Right, Julie?
I think so, because, and you know, you make a good point, too. If they're cutting off fire and police, I mean, let's say a very small town only needs maybe 3 police officers. But if he wants to cut it down to 1, then you're going to go back to volunteering, and it's not right when you're paying that money.
That's right.
For salaries for, you know, these basic services, and for him to take it and put it somewhere else, it's just not good.
Yeah.
And who knows better than the people that live in that town what exactly they need?
And I mean, is it not crazy that this is what Republicans are always screaming about?
They want smaller government. But they want to take control.
Self-control. But apparently that only applies, it doesn't apply when they want to take massive control, which is what Scott Walker wants, and also to bust up unions. So there we go. So I just thought I would bring that all to your attention. This is nothing but a plan to generate revenue for big, big, big businesses, not small businesses.
And who's backing him on this? Who's pushing him on this?
Oh, gosh, let's see.
So certainly not the people.
The Koch brothers really like it. And probably Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And probably Nike. And probably companies like that. But your basic average American.
And those wouldn't be small businesses.
Really? Is Walmart not a small business?
It's a hometown grocery store.
Exactly. So that's the problem. We have a government that is increasingly being given over to the interests of the most powerful and wealthy among us. And that is one thing, but it's when it starts to pervert our actual democratic system that we all should get really, really concerned and very worried and get out there and do something about it, because this is really, really scary. I have two daughters, grown daughters, who are out there making their way in the world, and you know, I didn't bring them into this world to be a drone for corporate America. I did not bring them into this world to be a little worker bee for Walmart or for large corporations. We should be able to hold fast to those freedoms and rights that were guaranteed to us in the Constitution and that this country was founded on. I was actually going to go more into the nuclear issue, and that is why I opened with Ann Coulter's declaration that actually excessive radiation is good for all of us, because I think that nuclear energy is a very serious issue that affects all of us, and it's one of those things that because you don't see it, most of us, it's not in our neighborhood, you don't see it, you just know that your TV goes on when you turn on the TV and the toaster works, and so it's just out there. But this situation in Japan has forced us to take a hard look at what's at stake when we invest in this kind of energy. And I'm not really truly sure whether we should go further with nuclear energy or not. I wish I had a clear answer to that. But I think that when an energy source is so dangerous that it could actually eliminate the planet, and truly it could, if enough of these nuclear reactors melted down, they could kill our planet. And so I think that we have to ask ourselves, no longer just as Americans, but I mean as citizens of the world, are there situations where the cost and the risk of a source of energy is so great that it's not worth it, that it even would be worth it to give up some of the things we enjoy? Because with nuclear energy particularly, It's the type of situation where there cannot be any mistakes. It has to be perfect. And at least in my lifetime, I've not seen anything that human beings have built or designed or created or run that is perfect. And some things are too dangerous to have any risk at all. And this is where I think we are with nuclear energy, that unless there comes some way, unless there is a way to really truly protect us from the consequences of a disaster, a mistake, then I don't really see that this is the way that we should be going.
Absolutely. You know what fascinates me is wind power and solar power, but just exactly how much electricity and energy can that produce?
2%.
Sad, isn't it?
Well, it does do pretty good, though, for California. They've got all those cool wind things all the way from San Francisco to L.A. They've got, like, every few inches, it seems like there's one of those big wind. Like, just as long as they don't hit each other. They're, like, going along the hills. And, you know, they're pretty cool. It kind of looked like an alien invasion, though, at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I have actually been out there, Todd, in California, and seen some of those wind farms. And we thought it was, my husband and I, when we traveled through Northern California, thought it was amazing how many of those were standing completely still.
I didn't see any still.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
they were all going.
We saw some that were not even moving.
I think it's because they angle them all a little different. It's probably which direction the wind's blowing. And you know what? And on my way to Colorado, there's a ton of them out in Kansas, too, now.
Oh, they started putting them out there? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I try not to drive across Kansas. It's really frightening.
Well, why is that?
God, there's nothing there. You'll fall asleep and fly off the road any second. Mm-hmm. We did it. Of course, we do it in the middle of the night, which is never good.
You have not learned to appreciate the prairie landscape of Kansas.
The splendor of nothing.
Well, that is not nothing. That is not nothing. That is a prairie landscape, and it's beautiful.
I believe you.
Kathleen, so what do you think about all this Ann Coulter mess with, you know, radiation is good and everything? I've seen some people willing to even buy her a plane ticket to go over there and help with the cleanup since she thinks it's so good. Think she'll take him up on that?
I will give her all of my Southwest frequent flyer miles. I will give her all of them today to go over there and go stand in one of those nuclear reactors with the 80-year-old men that they're sending in there, because, you know, they're sending in very, very elderly people, which makes sense. But we know why that is. We know why they're doing that. So, yeah, I agree with it. I will definitely give her all of my frequent flyer miles to go there.
Does Southwest fly to Tokyo?
I don't think so. But maybe she could transfer them to another airline.
Yeah. Air Japan.
Yeah, Air Japan. I don't know. Okay, so one other thing I wanted to raise before I go, because we elected a Republican Congress that came in on a wave of anti-increased taxes, and we've already talked about the hypocrisy of what they're really doing with that referendum. But I thought this was an interesting article from the Washington Post by Ezra Klein about cutting government spending, actually raising the deficit. And what he points out is that when you cut federal spending for enforcement efforts by, for example, the IRS, food inspectors, fraud investigators for Medicaid and Medicare, what happens is that, for example, it's been shown that every dollar the IRS spends chasing down a tax cheater brings in $10 to the Treasury. So what the Republicans are saying is cut that ability of the IRS to go after cheaters. Gosh, I wonder if there are a lot of cheaters on taxes in the Republican Party.
No.
You think?
I don't think so. Come on.
But anyway, this is a kind of short-sighted, politically motivated attitude that is going on with Republicans right now. They're not doing anything to really seriously or significantly reduce the deficit.
Well, you know, they cut the NPR funding, so that's going to help a lot. Wouldn't you agree?
That works out to be less than $1.50 a year for every American to pay for NPR. And
But did you hear that in addition to NPR, I don't mean to interrupt, but talking about radio, we here at Jackalope have been working with the FCC to get our FM license, and we were going to go ahead and do our AM license. Well, here's the funny thing. The FCC at this time has decided we're not going to accept any licenses for AM radio. Okay, this isn't home of the free and the brave anymore, right? No more FM or AM radio licenses will be accepted at this time. None. Because those frequencies are now being used by other sources. That's all they will say.
Other sources.
Kind of like our analog signal that got taken away for television. So now if we have an emergency and the power goes down, no one will know what's going on. What a wonderful state of affairs.
Wow. That's my next show. Other sources.
That's crazy, isn't it?
We'll get on FM. It's pretty scary. They just won't let us on AM.
Yeah, because AM reaches a further band. Right. You can go a lot further on AM.
It seems to be dominated by right-wing...
What does that tell you?
Right
now. And they don't want anyone else to get on there.
And they don't want anybody else to get on there. Yeah.
Jerks. So. I had to interject. Sorry.
An editorial comment.
That'll be your next mission. Why can't we get on AM? Where those Republicans?
Kathleen will never come back after today. She'll have these jerks hijacked me.
No, this is great. I really appreciate Julie and Todd chiming in, because sometimes I get on a little tangent, and it's good to know when you're getting too boring.
You're not boring.
Anyway, business plot. Google it. It's actual documented American history, but for some reason nobody learns about it in history class, and nobody is aware of the fact that these.
So why do you think that is? Do you think, public schools are public? Do you, and I know they have certain boards that decide, you know, what books they're going to choose and so forth. Why do you think that that stuff's not in history books? Do you think there's somebody specifically or a group specifically behind keeping that information out? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do. I think, I mean, my understanding of the way that history books get written and published and sold is that when it comes down to it, it's actually an extremely small number of companies. And those companies are, for the most part, overseen by another very small group of people. And most of them come from the state of Texas. I have nothing against Texas. I have a niece that lives there. Texas is a great state. It really is. But they shouldn't have control, or there should not be a small panel of people that have control
over the entire nation,
over what everybody else's kids learn in public schools as far as history. So that's what I'm thinking about it. So today's show, we talked about nuclear energy. We talked about the business plot that happened during the administration of Franklin Roosevelt. And again, I hope people will look that up and investigate it further, because it is true. And I really honestly believe that there are very wealthy, powerful interests at work today who would willingly and gladly and are at work to do this same type of thing, which is to take control of our government and put it into the hands of a very, very small number of people who have a lot of wealth and a lot of power. So that's not me, because I'm just on a little radio show here in Kansas City.
You know, I got one more question before we take off.
Yeah, you got a minute.
Okay.
30 seconds.
Well, you know how the Republicans rallied and they won Congress and everything. Do you think they've shot themselves in the foot and the Democrats are just going to take complete control of the next election?
Yes.
And you're not just saying that because you're a Democrat, right? No, I'm serious.
No, I think that's going to happen, because I think that to begin with, it was disingenuous.
Right.
I think that from the very beginning that they knew very well they were not about small government. They were not about less taxes. They are only about small government when it benefits them. And they're only, and I don't think their interest is in cutting taxes, because where they're cutting taxes is to all of the services that affect you and me, all of those things that you and I need. We need good public schools.
And so you think that America, everybody, they're waking up and they're seeing this as just a bunch of crap.
I think so. I hope so.
I think so too. Just wanted to kind of see what your thoughts were.
Thanks,
on that.
Thanks, Julie. We will be following up on all of this in our next show, or we will have new topics of discussion. But I'm going to end today with a quote, like I always do. And the quote today is this: that men do not learn very much from the lessons of history is the most important of all the lessons that history has to teach. And that was said by Mr. Aldous Huxley, quoted in the Wall Street Journal. Thank you for listening. Join us next week, Thursday. Don't Shoot the Messenger at 6 o'clock.
There's a bright golden haze in the meadow. I peep up. There's a bright golden haze in the meadow. Corn is as high as an elephant's eye, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Well, I say, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yes, what a wonderful day. Y'all look out there. I've got a beautiful feeling. Everything going my way. Y'all come on now. Cattle are standing like statues. The
cattle are standing like statues. They don't turn their heads as they see me ride by. But a little brown maverick is winking her eyes. She said, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yeah. Well, what a wonderful day. I want y'all to know, no, I've got a beautiful feeling. I've got everything. And everything going my way. Everything going my way. Y'all do it to me now.
Shoot the Messenger with your host, Kathy Wynn, a Jackalope Radio production.
All the sounds of the earth are like music. The sounds of the earth are like music. The breeze is as busy, it don't miss a tree. And a little old weeping willow is laughing at me. She said, oh, what a beautiful morning. Yes, what a wonderful day. Y'all, I got a beautiful feeling. I got everything. I got everything. I got everything. Woo! Everything's going my way. I'm sorry. But I got everything going my way, my way. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. I wanna thank you, little girl, for such a wonderful day. My way.